Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 8th of August, and I'm recording at 10:15 p.m., and that is British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's just have a quick look at some of the developments of this week. It was a somewhat traumatic event. Or week, I should say, for some markets, at any rate. They were roiled by two events, and those were the Russian-Ukraine situation and the sanctions that have been established by both sides, and the other one was in the Middle East. Those were the two big events. Now, basically, I see events in global events in two different ways. Now let's take first the situation in Iraq. It's appalling in terms of brutality, but we've unfortunately seen just so much of that over a good many years. But I feel that while it's a big event in the Middle East, it's a small event in terms of markets, provided, and this is the crucial factor, provided it does not cause the price of crude oil to spike sharply higher. Now, that has certainly not happened recently, and I think President Obama is engaged in something of a humanitarian mission, and rightly so. And also to help Iraq and to make sure that the government in Iraq can help make sure that they can defend their cities and main cities and oil installations. The other big event, and it's the biggest of the two that I'm mentioning, is the sanctions situation and the big Russian-Ukraine standoff. Here, you know all about that, and you're probably tired of hearing me write about it and talk about it, but I think it is hugely important, and I think a confirmation of that is the way it's affected markets in here over the last week. Now, the thing about this is that while it is a big event in terms of international involvement, reminder of the Cold War, it's also a big event in terms of markets, because as the developed countries that are involved, you got the whole European Union, you have the, including the United Kingdom, of course, you've got the United States, you have Canada, you have Australia, we also have Japan involved. So you could say that we've got most of the developed world, and Russia on the other side. Now, we know that sanctions are a lose-lose in the short term, and almost certainly the medium term as well. They're costly. They hurt corporate profits, and so the market has reflected that, and particularly in Europe. Now, it also begs the question of how do we actually get out of this. But I've written enough about that, and you'll be able to read all that. So I'll stick entirely to the markets here right now. Looking at the various stock markets, we have a number of short-term oversold conditions. We have a number of mean reversions to the rising 200-day moving averages. We saw a number of those 200-day moving averages breached to the downside. I posted charts to that effect on Thursday. But the short-term vector is that we have an oversold condition, and we did see some short covering in here today. What helped that along? Well, the Russian Defense Ministry put out a comment that its efforts with warplanes so that they had ended drills near the Ukraine border. And Bloomberg also put out an editorial saying we should have a try for a peacekeeping mission in here. I thought it had contradictions in it, I praise them for the effort. In terms of contradictions, they're saying in one breath, sanctions are the right policy for the long term, but we need to try to de-escalate the situation and perhaps involve Russia in a peacekeeping role so that Putin can save face. Well, I can see the short-term appeal to that, but what are we supposed to keep the sanctions going while we do that? It's tricky, and Bloomberg, to their credit, acknowledged the fact that it was a tricky situation overall. But this event has certainly not gone away. But in market terms, if something isn't seen to be getting worse on an almost daily basis, then it loses its influence. And so against this background of short-term oversold conditions, we did see a rally today. It produced a few modest upward dynamics on indices. We had an upside key on the transportation index, for instance, in the U.S. You can see some upward dynamics among European indices. So I think we started to see, I think it was probably mostly a bit of a short covering rally. And if there are no aggressive developments over the weekend in the on the Ukrainian border, and there probably won't be, we'll see maybe a little bit more rally in here next week. But the problem isn't over. I don't think. I do feel that tough sanctions are by far the best solution, but it's still a medium-term, potentially a lengthy medium-term situation. Okay. Now, where do we stand? What about other markets here? Well, looking at Asia, we did have an overbought condition in Japan, and it's correcting that in a hurry. It has just about corrected that, but Japan is not immune from these developments. Yesterday, we had a bit of a downward dynamic in the China A-share index that I commented on. We had no follow-through today, which was encouraging, and it was not significant. We had just a small rally, but the fact that we got no follow-through to the downside suggests that the risk of a really significant reaction is somewhat reduced here. Again, I like the China market. It's been very easy to make false starts on this in terms of the A shares over the last couple of years here, and I had been disappointed to see rallies that looked quite dynamic and then see them fade very, very quickly. But I think the governments behind this particular move, or at least more than it was behind the others previously. And I think it's an interesting market in terms of valuations, some of the very best in the world. And you also, it's got a generally a low correlation with Wall Street. Again, some of those Scandinavian markets, they've seen, for instance, take Norway. Owen mentions it here today. That's pulled back to the MA, and it's a very inexpensive market. It's probably the most inexpensive market in developed Europe. Okay, what else to set here? India. Now, India's pulled back in the last couple of days quite sharply yesterday, a little less so in here today. It is in, I've described it as being in a medium-term consolidation pattern following the huge move to the upside that we did see earlier in the year. And if I take that Sensex index, that's still up 21%, over 21% this year in US dollar terms. So that's obviously a very good move overall. Within this consolidation, it still has higher highs and higher lows. If it breaks the rising lows, that will tell us that demand is losing the upper hand temporarily, and we could see a bigger reaction and consolidation. That wouldn't be all that surprising. But I want to emphasize, as I have before, in this that I think this is a fabulous market for the long term. And interestingly, there's a Bloomberg piece that I'll be posting, which measures valuations. Somewhat creatively. It uses well, I'll let you see it here, but it lists India's as and China as and Japan. I like all three of those markets, but it as you know, but it lists them as being on very attractive valuations by according to their calculations. Well worth having a look at that, I think. So again, I do like those very much for the medium to longer term. Japan has underperformed this year, as you know, but it had spectacular performance last year, and I've just described this as a big, lengthy, medium-term consolidation. And it's still going on here, but it's probably in a nibble range here right now. So is China on a setback? So is India on a setback? In the European markets, is one tempted for some bargain hunting? It's tempting, but Europe is you have to be an optimist about how this Russian-Ukraine situation is going to play out, because that's the dominant influence. And so you know, we could easily see a short-term rally here, but we may well have at least medium-term peaks in those markets, which would be my guess. I'd be a little bit cautious on that. Going back to that Asian Pacific region, Vietnam's interesting as well. I think that most of them are interesting. I would also say that Australia, I think, is interesting as the resources sector improves. Australia's got a lot more going for it than just resources, but the resources had been a drag, and now they're starting to improve. So interesting. I feel. And in terms of the overall outlook for these stock markets, I've been saying for a long time that this would be a choppy year. There would be some downside drafts. We've certainly seen that in Europe here recently, but I felt that we were unlikely to see any savage bear markets for major indices here. And I don't think there'll be in terms of global events, I don't think we're likely to see any major bear markets now. What could make me have to retract that statement in a hurry? Well, if we had a big spike in the price of crude oil, that is not a risk at the moment. It could only be caused by unrest. And hopefully that's a contained risk. here, and one of my long-term forecasts is that oil will be lower in real terms in the future due to all the renewables that are being created. They're becoming a little bit more efficient, particularly in terms of solar. And there's also some new development with nuclear, although it's a very slow process in getting that all sorted out and underway. But Japan is apparently starting up some reactors in the fourth quarter. And that would be, I think that would be good news here overall. Fracking's the big one. I wish more countries were taking up fracking, particularly for gas. Okay, what about global bonds? Well, they certainly moved lower today. We had those U.S. Treasury 10-year yields swooning today, getting down into the two low 30 regions. Got down to 234. I think and change before closing at 242. That's still pretty low. And my guess, and it can only be a guess, my guess is that bond investors who I are generally a shrewd group, bond investors are saying that global GDP growth is going to recover very slowly. And that would be in line with my overall view that global growth does recover very slowly following a severe global credit crisis recession. The reasons are obvious. You get massive deleveraging by individuals and corporations. That lowers tax receipts for governments. Everybody cuts back. Unemployment rises. It's hard to get markets to recover quickly against that background. And I think that with U.S. Treasury yields, I do say with no certainty whether there's seldom any certainty in markets, except that things will fluctuate. I do say that I feel that it's concern over slow growth rather than a Japanese-style deflationary process. Now, also the Fed is determined that we not see a deflationary environment in the United States, and I tend to back central banks. I think that's usually a very good policy and strategy here overall. If you look at that Merrill Lynch 10-year total return chart, just type that in on the library, just type in Merrill Lynch and you'll see it on the menu there. You'll see it's broadly ranging sideways. It is at the upper side of its range. Updates on that, incidentally, are usually a day or two behind. And but so it'll be a fraction higher than it is right now, but still going sideways here overall. The good news for bondholders is that they're not losing money in here yet, but at these interest rates, and given the fact that if you expect anything other than deteriorating economic conditions over the longer term, deteriorating economic conditions over the longer term, to repeat that for emphasis, I don't expect that. I expect, I've said that it takes at least a minimum of 5 years to start to get back to anything close to normal following a credit crisis recession, and that's usually if it's an individual one-off situation, individual country that we're talking about. If it's a global factor, and many certainly many economies were affected by the credit crisis recession, now some are saying it can go 10 years or even a little longer. I don't think it'll be anything like as long as Japan, but I think the next 3 to 4 years are likely to be not hugely different from what we have actually been seeing. It's kind of three steps forward and two and a half backwards, but to gradually improving overall, and we do see that in the data, I believe. So I think that again, if we have turbulent conditions for stock markets, then bond markets are a temporary safe haven. I would very much stick with the short-term durations, though, because if you get caught in a bond market sell-off and you're holding the 10-year, you're really stuck there for a long time. And I would be wary of those markets. I would much prefer to have good high-yielding shares. Resources shares provide excellent yields. It'd be BHP Billiton, Rio Tinto, the two biggest miners. Those are outstanding candidates, and there are more. There are certain oil companies still very attractive yields overall, and there's also some performance there, as there is in the miners. They're starting to recover, and I would much rather have those than the long dated government bonds. But that's probably a minority view. You can decide yourself whether you think that's it's good that it's a minority view or not. Okay, looking at currencies, our feeling here is that the U.S. dollar will remain a long-term recovery candidate. I think that partly because it had been coming down for so many years and it is so low, and the fact of that the U.S. is virtually self-sufficient in energy, the fact that it has recovered its lead role. Well, it never lost it, but it strengthened its lead role in technological developments. I think that's a hugely important factor. It is always an inventive, resourceful economy, despite headwinds from the national government, which we have right now. So I think, though, that the U.S. Is we're is not we're not it will do well enough, certainly to keep, I think, deflation at bay across, in terms of being across the board factor, as I've already said. I think it will do well enough to keep the U.S. dollar generally steady, and I think that the greenback will appreciate over the next 10 years as the U.S. Pulls out of this credit crisis recession and gets back to more of a normal GDP growth rate. Higher interest rates would certainly help to influence recoveries in those various currencies. That's the important one to mention in here. Do we see any basket case currencies here at the moment? Not among the major markets. Again, the euro mentioned on so many occasions, which is a little steadier in here today, back up to 1.3410 against the U.S. dollar. The fact that it's an important reserve currency, second most important reserve currency in the world, will help to keep it generally firm. I think also the Chinese renminbi will probably be generally firm. And sterling, well, I think the central bank has helped to nudge sterling a little lower here in the short term. We did have a lot of concern expressed in the financial press when it got up to that 170, 130 level against the US dollar. It's currently 167.73, 1.6773 against the US dollar in here today. I don't think they'll want to see it a whole lot lower, but I would think somewhere in the 160 to 165 region would I wouldn't be at all surprised if the if sterling didn't find good support in that area. Australian dollar, I think the Australian Central Bank would definitely like to see the Australian dollar a little easier, and it may well get its way. But we are unlikely to have huge swings here in the currency markets. I think that the Japanese yen, maybe that will ease a little bit further against the US dollar over the next few years. Okay. What about some of these resources here? Well, I think that they're all in support building recovery phases in terms of metal prices. And the leaders on the upside, as you know, it's been palladium. And the only thing that deters me in that, and to my cost here, as I've been shy of buying it, is because Russia really controls that market, and I think Russia will need the revenue at some stage, and Russia could dump a lot of palladium onto the market overnight and cause a traumatic reaction in there, and I think that's more a question of when, not if, that actually happens. But gold, I think, has a role as a small hedge in one's portfolio. All these precious metals are best picked up on weakness, and so silver at 1991, I think that's got a again, defensive qualities there because it performs as high volatility gold for the most part. And platinum, again, Russia and South Africa are the main suppliers here, but this is a steady market. It's got a little lot of support building is evident there, and I know I'm repeating that, but it's the dominant theme here. And also for the industrial metals, they're all in recovery stages. I don't expect them to do anything hugely dramatic to the upside, but they will gradually move higher because producers are cutting supplies. And this always happens at this stage of the cycle. You know, they overproduce when economies are booming, and then they get into trouble, and then they start cutting back and concentrate not so much on opening new mines and increasing production, but concentrate on providing value for shareholders and preserving capital. And that's the mode that they're in right now, which is why they look attractive. And it is a late mover in cyclical bull market phases. And we don't see anything like overextended rallies to the upside in these miners. So that suggests to me, it's another factor to suggest that we don't have big bear market downside risk, which a lot of people are talking about for global stock markets. And again, with that proviso, provided those crude oil prices don't spike higher, or provided there isn't a massive deterioration in something like the Russian West dispute here. But I think Russia's too small and under too much economic pressure for that to be a dramatic international crisis. Okay, and what about? No, I think I've pretty well covered it here. I was going to say the energy prices, but I've mentioned those. I mean, we've got crude oil here at the WTI 97.65. That's good. That's below $100. is the Brent is at 104 and change. That's good. That's the lower side of its range for years to come. So there we are. On that note, have a great weekend. All the very best to all of you. Owen's away next week, by the way, although he'll be doing the audio Friday a week from now when I head out for a bit of a short break myself. Good night.